And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. This is a very, very busy week, and it's a exciting time for NFL fans because there's going to be a lot of news that comes out this week, Paul. The Combine wraps up today in Indianapolis, Indeed. So we'll get to some of the storylines out of Indy. I know you and John were out there covering that, so we will sort of tackle plenty of topics in terms of the prospects. But free agency also gets underway. That is on Thursday, March 9th, but Tuesday, tomorrow, teams can talk to potential free agents and also try to lock up their own players. So there's going to be a lot of news and nuggets that start dragging their way across the NFL landscape over the next few days. And there's already some rumors that relate to the NFC East, but this is really a big time of the year where you start to shape your team, Paul, as you get into the meat and potatoes of what I like to call the offseason.
Well, you know, all during the course of the offseason, all the personnel departments are doing all of their due diligence and their research on everything they could possibly figure out about not only the pro guys who are going to be free agents, but also, obviously, the college guys. But here's where it gets tricky now, because from the time that the college season ended, or the pro season for that matter, you have a bunch of guys, and we'll throw out Wisconsin lineman Ryan Ramczyk as an example, who do have sketchy medical situations that are either ongoing or, in some cases, guys who had medical issues that they think are healed up, but until you actually get to check them out, you're not 100% sure. For example, Khalil, the left tackle from the Vikings.
Matt Khalil.
Okay. His father apparently told a reporter in Minneapolis, or it might have even been on Twitter in the last 24 hours, he is fully healthy. He's fine. He's ready to go.
No issues.
No issues. Leg is doing great. Let's go. Could it be that free agency opens up this week and he just miraculously healed, so now he can get into a...
the timing is perfect.
Isn't it, really? So now, you know, we can start the bidding for him. I don't want to name names, but there was a lineman who would come in to work out for the Giants a couple of times, you know, last year too, and he was supposed to be healthy, and obviously he wasn't because where he wound up going the last couple of years didn't work out so good, and he barely played, and now he's out of the game. It's easy for guys to say that they're healthy,
of course,
but you really need to get to the nitty-gritty of it. So anyway, that's the trickiest part about this particular time right now, because you really need to narrow your scope and get as much legitimate medical information as you can, because if you're going to base your decisions on who you think's available, who might be available, and then you wind up getting a bad medical piece of paper on the back end, you have really messed yourself up.
Well, that's why you have to do your due diligence, as you just alluded to. You have to do your homework regardless of whether the mother, the father, the third cousin declares that the player's healthy.
The next-door neighbor says,
yes,
he's
exactly.
Good. I saw him mowing his lawn.
You can't take the word of friends and family. You need to do your own homework, which every team does, as well as doing the homework in terms of the prospects to determine, listen, is it too risky to take a chance on this young guy who has some question marks medically, or do we go in the direction of a free agent?
Well, let me give you the Ramczyk example. I spoke with him at the Combine, and I asked him point blank, given the medical questions that you have right now, is it your anticipation that you will be a full go at the beginning of training camp, or is it your anticipation that they're going to kind of gradually move you along and that your target is to be ready for opening day week one of the regular season? And do you think you'll be competing for a starting job by that point? Will your body, the hip labrum he had repaired, allow you to do so? Oh, yes, absolutely. I plan on starting, you know, first game number one. He believes that everything is 100% hunky-dory, fine, and
which
blah,
most
blah,
players
blah, blah.
Do.
Exactly. Now, I'm not going to say he's not telling the truth, because I think he believes that is the truth. He probably does. But without an orthopedist, you know, going through everything he's got to go through and then giving me a written piece of paper that says, I don't know about this. You know what I'm getting at.
Of course. Well, that's what goes back to why teams need to make sure that the people that are going to monitor these players take a look at their medicals before they draft them or sign them. Real quickly, some free agency news and notes related to the NFC East, and not necessarily the Giants, but teams that the Giants are going to go up against twice a year in the upcoming season. Monday morning quarterback, SportsIllustrated.com, has an interesting story that the Redskins, they're still contemplating whether or not they want to invest in Kirk Cousins long term. They did give him the franchise tag. Now they have until July 15th to determine whether or not they can work out a long-term deal. According to Albert Breer of Monday Morning Quarterback, they believe that perhaps they could trade Kirk Cousins and get away with having Colt McCoy as their starting quarterback. That's perhaps some of the rationale in what is being tossed around with the Washington front office. That is rather interesting. And McCoy is a 30-year-old vet, but he's basically had most of his reps clearly in the preseason for the Redskins, other than under center as a regular season quarterback, because they've had RG3 as well as Kirk Cousins. So that was one interesting thing. And then the Eagles, according to reports, are shopping their backup quarterback, Chase Daniel, which is not necessarily a surprise. And they're also willing to perhaps listen to offers for Jordan Matthews, their star wide receiver. I will tell you this, Philadelphia, whether it be through a trade or through free agency, Paul, you figure the wide receiver position is going to be a key position that they're going to focus in on, considering that receiving core had a case of the dropsies this past season, and they want to bring in a wealth of talent to surround a very young quarterback in Carson Wentz.
You know, I think that the thing that bothered me a little bit about what happened with Wentz last year is that, and I, by the way, you guys know I'm a believer in him. I mean, I said that last year. He was the best quarterback coming out. I'm a Carson Wentz fan. But what bothered me was the way that the Eagles protected him with Peterson, with the game planning, the play calling. It was clear that they were really treating him with kid gloves when he first got into the lineup. But then as things started to break down a little bit and they needed more from him and they started feeding him more and he had to take more chances and, of course, it didn't go as well, people were getting on this guy. And I saw quite a few people say, oh, you know, maybe he wasn't as good as we first thought. My comment is, well, hold on a second. That's not on him. That's on the Eagles. Because just because he did well at the beginning when they were doing their best to kind of play it safe with him doesn't mean that they should suddenly have said, well, now we can't play it safe. It was a matter of circumstances where they all of a sudden said, well, our quarterback needs to be able to do more because we're slipping, and now we're not going to make the playoffs, and now we need some guys to make more plays. Well, guess what? That wasn't Carson Wentz's plan in his rookie season. His rookie season, he was supposed to learn. Remember, they said in the offseason when they drafted him, he wasn't going to start right away.
Sam Bradford was lined up as a starter, and then they made the trade.
That was the deal. He was supposed to be a rookie quarterback who was going to learn the system for a season.
Correct.
And then start the next year. So I don't know why so many people got off of Wentz's bandwagon when, in my mind, he didn't do anything to ruin his stature as a prospect. My opinion.
No, I would agree with you. I think that ultimately they would have liked to have seen him take a few more chances down the field, because if you remember early in the season, it was more of dumping it off and trying to get him comfortable, like you alluded to. No doubt about that.
Which is fair. That's what you should do.
Absolutely. For a young quarterback, to develop him, get him comfortable, and then perhaps let him spread his wings as the season progresses. But for year one, what they got out of Carson Wentz, considering it was baptism by fire, and right before the season started, remember, they made that Sam Bradford trade.
Yes.
And he missed the majority of the preseason because of the rib injury.
Correct.
So you take all that into consideration, I would agree with you. I don't think Philly really has much to complain about. I think they're in a good position, but he needs, like any other quarterback, talent around him.
The last 5 or 6 weeks of the season, I heard a lot of people starting to question him, and why would you do that? Is he really any less of a prospect today than he was a year ago?
No, it's quarterbacks. It's the one position, as you well know, constantly put under the microscope. And Carson Wentz is no exception compared to even some of the veterans who are well established in this league. That is going to wrap up our opening segment here on Twitter. For those of you who want to watch the remainder of the program, head on over to Giants.com. Lance Medow, Paul Dottino with you here for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. on Twitter. We'll get to your tweets along the way here on the program. So the combine wrapping up today, free agency starting on Thursday. Tuesday, though, you can start talking to potential free agents to determine what the wheeling and dealing will play out to be with respect to NFL free agency. But as far as the Giants are concerned, Paul, JPP was given the franchise tag, so they have an opportunity till July 15th to work out a long-term deal. The other free agent of note for the Giants as they enter a critical period is probably Jonathan Hankins that you would put near the top of the list, as well as Keenan Robinson, two guys that had a great deal of impact on the defense. And those two players are going to have an opportunity to test the market. But, you know, the one thing that I've said, and you go back to Jerry Reese's press conference right at the end of the season, and this to me was one of the most critical questions that he was asked, Paul. He said when he was questioned about whether or not realistically he thinks the Giants could bring back JPP and Jonathan Hankins based on what the salary cap looks like, Jerry Reese's answer was that that is doable according to his projections. Now, that was a few weeks ago, but it's not as if anything has dramatically changed because, if anything, they got more wiggle room by parting ways with Rashad Jennings and Victor Cruz. So, if anything, the finances have changed to give the Giants a little bit more room to perhaps work out a deal. But the goal for the Giants, if they want to keep this defensive line intact, is to get a long-term deal done with JPP as well as retain the services of Jonathan Hankins at this point.
Well, and if you also were keeping track of what John Mara said down at the Combine in Indy this past week, he also said there, to reiterate a little bit about what Jerry Reese said, they would like to work out a long-term deal with JPP. I mean, that's their intention. They're not really wanting him to play 1 year, $17 million. This tag, and we've told you this on the show now for a couple of weeks, the tag can be used as a tool to extend the talking period, not necessarily because, oh, that's what we want to do with this guy. And that's precisely what the Giants intend to do.
And the other thing that I think is also important to note, because, you know, just interacting with fans on Twitter, and I'm sure you can relate to this, Paul, a lot of fans are anxious for them to get the long-term deal done before March 9th because they feel that that could perhaps give the Giants some more flexibility to negotiate with other free agents. But this is the way that I'm looking at it, Paul. Whether JPP gets a long-term deal or he at least is penciled in on the franchise tag for the next few weeks, he's still going to have a significant cap hit in year number one. It's not as if, even if they work out a long-term deal, you're not all of a sudden bringing the cap number down immensely where he's only going to take up about like $5 million, let's say, on the cap.
You could bring it down enough of a number, though, that it might just make a difference between getting a player and not getting a player. It can be enough of an incentive to make it happen, which is quite frankly why the Giants want to make it happen.
Well, but also I think that it could also give them a better idea of what lies ahead for future years, too. That's why it's also important, much more so than maybe just this season. It's the fact that if you know JPP is on the books, you can map out what's going to happen in 18, 19, 20, and so forth, because you know what number he's penciled in on.
Here's the good news. If you get a long-term deal with Jason, it actually benefits both parties for a few reasons. A, the Giants get to lower their cap number and they get to have certainty with a player at least for a year, probably two or three. B, for the player, if he signs a multi-year deal, okay, his guarantee is going to be more than what the 1 year $17 million tag guarantee is. So while he may not make, quote, as much money over the term of the deal that he would like to make, okay, he's got a higher guarantee.
More security.
And quite frankly, okay, remember, football's a tough game. Well, here's the thing that a lot of these guys seem to forget when they get tagged, and I'm not talking about Jason in particular, but some of these guys, when they get tagged, they seem to forget, if I go for the multi-year deal and I'm taking the guarantee that's in that, it's so much more than the tag, and if I happen to break my leg in game four of the regular season, well, I turned out coming out ahead by taking that multi-year deal because the guarantee's a heck of a lot more than the $17 million, whatever it is, 1 year or whatever the tag turned out to be. So there is a benefit from the player's perspective by signing a multi-year deal. It's not just, you know, oh, he's not going to get as much money as he wanted to. No, there is a benefit here. There's a silver lining to doing it.
Well, and from also the player's perspective, you mentioned if he goes down in week four, I mean, it hurts the team because then obviously they've invested in that player and they're not going to get much of a return. But from the player's perspective, when you're on the franchise tag, it's a prove it year all over again because you want to then prove to the rest of the NFL landscape as well as your own team that you warrant a long-term deal perhaps the next year.
And if you get hurt, you got nothing.
There you go. So you take on somewhat of a risk if you're playing under the franchise tag as well. I mean, it's similar to what we referenced with Kirk Cousins, where Cousins also wants a long-term deal because he's saying to himself, 1 year, I proved myself. I got the franchise tag. Here's another year, I proved myself. How many more years do you got to continue to prove yourself? So there's pros for both sides to hammer out a long-term deal. I don't think necessarily most people would disagree with that sentiment, but the bottom line is whether or not it could get done before the start of free agency or it gets done perhaps before July 15th, which is the deadline. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We will get to your tweets as well, but let's open up the phone lines here as we move forward on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we got Anthony on the line in Tampa. Anthony, what's happening?
Hey, Lance Paul, how are you?
Hi, Anthony. How are we doing?
Good. I'm doing great. First time caller. Just had two questions for you. The first one, I just wanted to, and I heard your comments on JPP, but I'm a big Giant fan, but I'm the type of fan that I'd rather see them take two steps back and use that money for other players that they could bring in short term, and then possibly draft a defensive end or lineman in the draft. Those are my thoughts. I just think it's smarter for them to do that instead of tagging him or sign him to a long-term contract, getting onto his ears, even though I believe he's 29. I just believe taking a step back and then, you know, looking towards the future. That's one question. And the second one, I wanted to see your thoughts on. I've been looking at a lot of the combines and a lot of the reporters writing a lot of different thoughts on the mock drafts and so forth. Are they really angling to draft a tight end this time around? Because I see a lot of reports that are angling for O.J. Howard. I saw something this morning on Bucky Hodges, I believe. What are your thoughts on that? And I do thank you, and good luck with the season and the rest of the way. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks. I mean, you always have to be careful with respect to these mock drafts. There's tons of different mock drafts. And I think every writer that writes a mock draft has an angle or some type of an agenda, but that doesn't mean necessarily that the Giants have spoken to those writers who put together the mock drafts to tell them what direction they're going in.
And let's remember, okay, it's so laughable. Free agencies this week. Anything that you write today
is almost irrelevant. Yeah. But they need the content, so.
From a week today, you know how many mock drafts are going to be turned totally upside down?
Because they had this team going for a defensive lineman, and then they realized that that team just made a splash on a defensive lineman on the free agent market, you know? So all of a sudden the philosophy changes.
Let me just say this to you, okay? The Giants clearly have to do something to help the run blocking on the offense, okay? That's pretty obvious. If it's not going to be an offensive tackle or an offensive guard, a lineman, let's just say offensive lineman in the draft, and it's not going to be an offensive lineman in free agency because maybe they can't afford a guy or maybe the pick just doesn't fall right, well then, what's the other way you can help the run blocking in your offensive scheme? You get a powerhouse blocking tight end. That's like the third option. Okay, if options one and two fall apart, the best way to help your running game is to get a powerhouse blocking tight end. Now, it doesn't take a genius to realize that the two best blocking tight ends who are of first round value would be Howard and Njoku. Howard is a proven blocker. Njoku is a bit of a projection.
More of an athlete in terms of the receiver.
Correct. Now, he showed some ability to do it when he was at Miami. They didn't use him very much in that regard, but he did show he's got the physical tools and the size to do it. He has the eagerness and the willingness to do it. And when asked, you could see he put effort into it. He wasn't one of these guys who shied away from it and didn't want to. but he is still more of a projection at doing it than Howard is, who was clearly proven at Alabama that he'll sock you in the mouth if he's told to do it.
Well, and there's a lot of depth at that position, too, Paul. You mentioned the top two, but I think what the combine showed is that it goes even beyond that.
Oh, probably four rounds, if not even more. So, but everybody wants to know about the first round. So if you're thinking the Giants want to address the run game in the first round, that's the thought process, okay? If you can't get the tackle, you know, where you want them in the first round, you can't get the tackle or the offensive lineman in free agency, the next best thing, get the blocking tight end. That's why you're probably seeing so many people float the names of Howard and Njoku at 23, because that does have a logical progression based on the possibilities and what we know the Giants need to do.
And remember, there's also, and you just noted, free agency is going to start Thursday. There are a couple of blocking tight ends that are out there on the free agent market. It's very possible the Giants could go that avenue to address what we just talked about. And then all of a sudden, the conversations about the Giants should go after a tight end in the first round could dramatically change.
Maybe every single one of those mock drafts gets thrown in the trash.
Yes, pretty much. So that's why I think it's important. And I understand that the majority of the fans are monitoring what's going on at the combine, and that's substantive, and it's important to note. But what happens from Thursday till next Thursday, at least the first week of free agency, is really going to redefine and reshape a lot of these mock drafts.
I would add one thing. I think it's pretty obvious, based on what the people at the combine are talking about and what some of the other people around the country are saying, Howard and Njoku have a really good chance of both being gone by 23.
Absolutely. I mean, that's something else that needs to be taken into consideration. And then also,
then what do you do? Pass rusher!
Correct, but it was interesting. I forget who he was talking about, but I thought Mike Mayock, who works for the NFL Network and knows the ins and outs of just about every prospect, it's amazing to me because he had mentioned that, and I forget who the player was, Paul, but this seems to happen every single year. He had a player that was projected to go in like the third or the fourth round, and then they saw how the kid performed at the combine, and now all of a sudden all the mock drafts bumped him up to a late first round, early second round pick. So, you know, that just goes to show you things in the blink of an eye dramatically change because teams see something all of a sudden in person, or they listen to the interview, they're blown away by what the prospect had to say, they find the prospect much more mature than they thought, and then all of a sudden the boards change and free agency is going to do the same thing. So, I mean, it's very premature to get into, you know, what the Giants' target may be, even if you focus on a position, given the fact that we have to see how free agency plays out first. Let's head back to the phone lines right now. We got Travis in Queens. Travis, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Travis. How's things with you?
Good. You guys felt like mom and dad going on a two-day trip and then coming back. So you guys did a good job out there, too. But so my question is this, right? Lance, first question for you and the second question for Paul. The first round, right, do you go defensive line? Or do you go linebacker?
Well, my answer is going to be defensive line, and I don't think that's really going to change based on the Giants' track record. They haven't taken a linebacker in the first round since Carl Banks, and you got to go back to 1984. So if you go based on track record alone, Travis, I don't see that trend breaking, considering every year we seem to be talking about it, and the drought is still on in terms of the last time a linebacker was taken in the first round. So I would lean towards, I think if the Giants were choosing between both positions, even though defensive line, I think, has more depth than linebacker, I would still lean towards defensive line. And plus, remember, you know, we have to see what happens with Jonathan Hankins. If they hypothetically lose Jonathan Hankins in free agency, then there's even more of a need to maybe go for a defensive lineman in the first round, as opposed to linebacker. I mean, the linebacker to watch is Keenan Robinson. He's a free agent. Other than that, though, everybody else is coming back with the exception of Kelvin Shepard. So Kelvin Shepard and Keenan Robinson are the two key free agent linebackers for the Giants, just like Hankins is on the defensive line. But if you go based on track record, I would lean towards defensive line.
Because I think, well, the reason I asked that, because I believe for sure Hankins is walking out the door. 25, he's going to get a big contract somewhere, and I don't think we're going to be able to size up with that contract. And then on top of that, if that spot is open, you don't think Jay Bromley, he could fill it as far as playing a better three technique and go linebacker? Because we desperately need a linebacker. And I think Keenan Robinson, he's definitely walking as well.
Well, I don't think that the Giants are skeptical about Bromley perhaps filling in. I mean, that's the reason why they drafted him, and he's going to have an opportunity to compete. But I don't think you can go into the offseason workouts and training camp, Travis, saying that Bromley should be the only guy in the mix. I think the goal for the Giants, as we've seen in years past, is you want as much competition as possible. So if there is a top stud defensive lineman there in the first round and they feel that he could come in and make an impact, even if you have some defensive tackles currently on the roster who know the scheme, I don't think it hurts them to bring in another one and say, hey, you know what? You're going to compete with Bromley. You have a legitimate opportunity to be a starter day one. Let the best man win. I don't think you should say to yourself, any team should do this. Well, we have one guy on the roster, so we should automatically go to linebacker. I think the more competition you have, the better off your defensive line is going to be. And you know, Spags likes to rotate personnel. So the more options you have, the better off they're going to be over the course of a game. I don't think they want to be in a position again where, you know, you have two defensive ends leading the NFL in snaps by the time the season ends. If you can spread the wealth, you're going to preserve the bodies over the course of the year.
Right. I kind of think you spread it with linebacker, though. And my take, because that's a spot that's more at need than would be, you know, the line. You could probably draft one of them guys in the fifth, fourth round, maybe, or later.
But, well, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Travis, but I would make the argument. I mean, I think the linebackers, the free agents that they brought in this year, there was a lot more depth at that position than perhaps in previous years. And if you look at what Devon Kennard produced, I know he was used down on the line this year. He made significant strides. We've talked numerous times about Keenan Robinson's versatility, as well as Kelvin Shepard. I mean, I think he's one of the underrated Giants on this team that shouldn't be overlooked. So, you know, you go around Jonathan Casillas, who was mainly a special teamer before he came to the Giants. He became an every down type of guy. You know, they had a lot of options at the linebacker position. I thought that was a position of strength. I don't think that's a position where maybe you could talk about 4 or 5 years ago where, you know, they were relying on a lot of young guys to develop all of a sudden overnight.
All right, because I know that tight end, they were telling us. So my question for Paul is this, right? So second round, would you go, I know you mentioned him a lot, this is your guy, would you go P. Ryan, right? Or would you go Jake Butt if we don't get O.J. Howard or the guy from Miami in the first round?
Well, ultimately, I will tell you, the tight end position, the running back position, and the cornerback position from the scuttlebutt that was being talked about around Indianapolis, and I should also say defensive line, those are the four spots where there seems to be a plethora of talent.
Right.
So I think you could probably get your power back later, and you could probably get your blocking tight end later if that's what you want to go to. So I don't know that I would, you know, have one preference or another. I think, you know, whichever guy's there. I still think P. Ryan's a great third-round value. I know, okay, because he lifted really well at the combine. There are people now moving him up on the board. I even got a call last week that said he's probably going to be in the second. That's kind of tough for me. And quite honestly, Butt's also coming off an injury.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, that go back to the medical again as we opened up the program. What's his status medically? Let's put it this way. Both of those guys would be on my radar, but I don't know right now that I could tell you which one I would pick.
I got you. And the last question, this is just a fun question for Giants. Who do you think had a better career for the Giants, Victor Cruz or Steve Smith? I'll take you guys' call off here. You
That's
guys
easy.
Did a great job, though.
All right, Travis, appreciate the phone
Victor
call.
Victor Cruz. That's easy. I mean, Steve Smith had the 100-yard reception season.
Yep.
Went to the Pro Bowl. But, you know, Victor had three outstanding seasons, and he also was a key component in the Super Bowl, where Steve Smith, he did catch a pass or two at the end of that 2007 season in the Super Bowl, but he was not a key component at the time.
Well, and think about how many game-changing plays Victor
no
Cruz
question.
Had, too.
That's
I mean,
easy.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's Victor Cruz, and I know this is not necessarily part of the criteria, Paul, but I would also lean towards Victor Cruz just based on the story. I mean, you come from an undrafted free agent from UMass a three-touchdown
you like the
game
story.
Against the Jets in the preseason, then you're hurt, and then you come back really out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden had that breakout campaign. Also, let's not forget about, you know, a rough debut against the Redskins. See, that's the one thing about Victor Cruz's story that I think gets unnoticed. And I know maybe it's somewhat of a negative connotation, but I think it makes the story that much more impressive that if you go back and you watch that opener against Washington when he had those drop passes and there was chatter about, you know, the Giants bringing in other wide receivers. I mean, Brandon Stokely, if I'm correct. Wasn't that season?
Brandon Stokely came in. He was going to be the slot guy. And then he had pulled a muscle and gotten hurt. And in Philadelphia, they pushed Victor Cruz into the lineup.
And then he responded because he had that great game.
And boy, did he respond.
Yeah. So that, to me, is the most fascinating part of the Victor Cruz story. The debut game against the Redskins, who knows what his future is even on this team? Or maybe he gets pushed back to the practice squad or something like that.
Fair point.
That is what I think gives a significant
fair
edge
point
over Steve Smith. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Nick is not too far away. He's in the Meadowlands. What's happening, Nick?
That's right. I'm knocking on the door. Let me
there
in.
There you go. All right, Nick, what do you got for us?
What's up, guys? How you doing today?
Hi.
Doing well.
Hey, Paul, I thought you'd be there for the, you know, probably the best part of the combine today, man.
Well, you know what? You know what? We all got a lot of stuff going down, and I was there for the last couple of days of last week, got a good flavor of what was happening, and I'm back here today. That's okay. It's fine. I got a lot done.
Glad you're back.
I got a lot done. So, thank you.
I wish free agency was already over because – Wow, that combine is something else, man, watching. I mean, I think we can definitely fix a couple of these problems on offense. I made a little board of my own, and there's a lot of players at tight end and wide receiver that are 6'3" plus, Paul, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't even know if we got to go out and really look for a wide receiver anymore. I mean, the Brandon Marshall talk, I mean, it sounded good to me, but I don't know with his past and injuries and stuff like that, but I think – you get one of these real big guys like the guy out of Michigan, what's his name, Chesson, you know, and then you got, I mean, there's so many guys that are like 6'4", 220, you know, that have a big vert,
there are
4'4 range, 4'5 range, you know, there's a lot. I got like 9 guys down on my board that, you know, we can get somebody in one of the rounds, you know what I mean, and tight end.
The truth is, and you're making a very good point, if you're the Giants and you're saying to yourselves, oh, we could use some depth at running back, we could use some depth at tight end, we could use some depth at wide receiver, we could use some depth on the defensive line, all of those spots are plentiful in this draft. That's the really good news about this. What's not so great news about it? Well, offensive line-wise, even the top-tier guys are not as good as in years past. That's the bad news.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
If they're not going to be there, then I'm with you on getting, you know, maybe a guard in one of the rounds, you know, that fits in there good with us. Hopefully we can figure out something in free agency with Leary, or maybe we can get, you know, Khalil at tackle, or your guy Reef, or Okung, we can fix something there, but I think we can fix things in a draft, definitely. There's P. Ryan there. Maybe he'll drop a little bit because of that 40 time, but he's still really good.
He did very well on the bench press,
There's a lot of guys, and there's a lot of tight ends. I'm looking at, you know, everybody likes Njoku, myself. Howard's not going to be there, especially after you see what he did in the combine. Look at the shoulders on that guy.
I know.
That guy is I think he's going to – I don't want to speak too soon, but if he plays like he did in college, Gronk's going to be a thing of the past, you know. But look at Bucky Hodges. He's just as big as Howard. He's got a bigger vert, 39-inch vert, a little bit bigger hands, and he runs almost just as fast. I mean, if he's there, we can get him, you know. So I don't think everybody has to panic. I don't know if we want a little – tied in like Ingram, but he blew the 40 away. Wow, he's fast, man. I mean, that could be a matchup problem right there if we picked him up even, you know. We you know, got Jarrell Adams, and hopefully he blocks a lot better going into year two. I think he'll be a lot better, get more play time. But we can pick up some guys, definitely. And then, like you said, defensive end, tackle, and cornerback. I mean, somebody was saying a couple weeks ago about safety. I think we're good at safety, you know what I mean? Especially with Adams coming back. Who knows with Burhey? Hopefully they re-sign Leon Hall. He can, you know, play both sides. But we should go after a corner, if anything, not a safety. You know, there's so many talented corners. I mean, in the later rounds, you could pick one up for depth.
Well, there's also depth at safety, too, Nick. I think both of those positions, there's
a
tremendous
amount
of depth.
I think we're good on safety, really. You don't got to keep going after a safety every year.
Nick, once again, every thin spot that you could imagine the Giants have, there's a deep crop in this draft except for offensive line. It's
offensive
the only
line,
one. It's the only one.
And
I'll be honest with you, too. What we were hearing in Indy is no different than what I heard when I went out there, and it was just confirmed for me, is that there are a bunch of third, fourth, and fifth-round offensive linemen who could make a team as a backup for you. They won't necessarily be expected to make an impact and be a starter right away, but they could help the depth on your line. So the Giants should still think about, you know, is there somebody we could get there that would help the depth chart? But in terms of that immediate impact on the line, you know, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this to you right now, and I said it on the draft show when we were out in Indianapolis. The top three offensive tackles on the board that everybody's talking about, whether it's Bowles, Ramchick or Robinson, three of them.
Or Lamp, a guard, though. Right?
Lamp's a guard, yeah. But all three of the offensive tackles.
He's strong. I like him.
I will tell you, they all have their naysayers. They have all received mixed reviews from the consensus out there in Indianapolis for various reasons. None of these guys, none of them, are the blue-chip offensive linemen that have come out over the last 4 or 5 years. And that's a shame because, you know, obviously that's something the Giants could really use.
Well, but that also means that it'll be interesting to watch how the free agent market plays out, because if teams are not confident in this young group of tackles, then you're going to see a lot of money probably being thrown around at these tackles on the free agent market.
And most of those guys, if not all of them, are older and beaten up.
Of course, yeah. That's the price you got to pay.
That's what I hope we can figure out, you know, in free agency. But the thing that would help that out the most is if we can get something done with JPP right away, because I hope that's what they're going to do. Give him, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal for, you know, like $55 million or so, you know, and guarantee him like $38 million. I don't know how those numbers work, but something, you know, and that they can free up some cap space and do what they got to do. But, you know, what I was going to say is the other day I called you at the combine and I was saying that the body type to Foreman was like LeGarrette Blount, and John was like, that's a good comparison. It's not too bad, right?
But, well, he doesn't run like Blount, though.
No. He's fast, though. He's pretty fast.
Yeah, but, he runs more like a guy who doesn't have a power body, and that's a bit of an issue for some folks, and I don't blame them for feeling that way.
I want to throw something out there, though. This is just Ike Taylor was comparing body size, and he said Bo Jackson. And I said, what? With Fournette. And I said, for one thing, Fournette ran a 4.5. Bo Jackson ran a 4.13.
Yeah,
at 230 pounds.
Forget about what he said. Don't even go there. But I will tell you this.
I know,
if Fournette's there at 23.
I'd be
surprised.
I'd be
shocked.
To compare Bo Jackson ever.
Well, you know, I mean, but that's what comes out of the combine. You know, there's so much content and so much analysis, or a lot, I like to say, over analysis, that people get a little bit crazy in terms of their comparisons and so forth.
That's what I know. I know that. But I'm just saying, I don't ever want to hear Bo Jackson's name, because if anybody ever got to watch him, and I know you two guys did, including myself,
he was awesome.
He was.
I wanted him to give up baseball.
Best athlete I've ever seen in my lifetime.
I did.
The best.
If he was a pure football player, he would have been a Hall of Famer.
It was Bullet Bob Hayes, you know? Those are the two guys, you know, and then you got Henry Armstrong way back in the day. Those are the best athletes I've ever seen. If you ever saw Bo Jackson's first hit as a Royal, they said, holy crap, how did he beat that run out? He hit it the
You're right,
second,
Nick.
And he beat
Nick,
the run
Nick,
out.
We got to go. I appreciate it, though.
Nick,
great conversation.
Get Robinson, re-sign him.
All right, Nick, appreciate the phone call.
I will stand by my comparison, though, that P. Ryan is Natron Means. I will stand by that.
Yeah, I don't think that's a stretch. But I was going to say, I mean, he mentioned that he could perhaps fall, and I actually think he helped his cause at the combine because he was a real standout in the bench press. So I think a lot of teams are going to see that he's got strength that maybe doesn't necessarily always show up.
There were some naysayers, though, on him. And what we found out from some of the draft gurus is that the naysayers believe that, of course, he doesn't have quite the speed. And then the other thing they're saying is his power may not translate well to the NFL because he does not run away from contact. We heard the same thing from Brandon Jacobs, that he runs into contact too much. He wants to play a power game and knock guys over and bounce off of guys like a pinball. Well, obviously that's easier to do in college than it is at the NFL level.
Yeah.
And so the naysayers are saying he doesn't avoid enough contact, he takes too many hits, and that's not going to work well in the NFL. That's what the naysayers say. The pro P. Ryan people say the power, the physicality, defenders are not going to be too anxious
to absorb the contact.
To be absorbing that contact, yeah, because he is so incredibly powerful.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Charlie's in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen, how y'all doing?
Hey, Charlie.
Doing all right, Charlie. What do you got for us today?
Well, I got this draft is so heavy in so many positions, like you were saying, that teams that have a lot of draft choices are really going to become rich.
Charlie, that's the best thing you've ever said on this show. And I'm not joking.
Go out on a high note.
Because you know what? It is absolutely the truth. You can stock up on quantity in this draft.
I mean, just looking at the DBs here on the combine, I mean, there's so many incredible DBs. Some guys 6'4", running like 4.5s, 4.46s, and it's just amazing. But what I think is going to happen is I think some guys are going to drop, and I think you're going to have some teams that have a lot of draft picks who aren't enamored with a certain player. I think the Giants are going to be positioned at 23. Possibly to be able to move down, go down to like 26, 27. I think Kansas City is one of those teams that might move up. And we might be able to get a second-round draft pick and hopefully be able to switch our fourth-round draft pick with them and get back to where we were before the walkie-talkie incident. And we might be able to pick up, you know, another draft pick and change positions with another one. And that, I think, would really help us in getting more players, better players. And like you said, I mean, the offensive line, forget it. I mean, we got to get that in free agency. But every other position, I think we could become a little richer too.
All right,
but
now, Charlie, let me go through the draft value chart with you for 1 second, because
sure.
I want to run
yeah.
through your hypothetical, and we'll see how realistic it is. You want to move from 23 to 27. Okay,
yep.
So according to the draft value chart, which is only a guide and a basis under which to work, you're talking about moving approximately 80 points on the draft value chart with Kansas City if you're going to move from 23 to 27. Okay, now that means you got to pick up 80 points in the other exchange. So now you're saying you want to move up in the fourth round from where you are at 140 to 132. See, that's a bad deal for the Giants because that's only worth 4.5 points.
Yeah.
So that would be a bad deal for the Giants.
No, I'm not just saying just do that. I'm saying also get a second-round draft pick.
Oh, get a second-round pick. Well, understand this. A second-round pick, you want to – well, second-round picks, the minimum they're worth is 270 points. So what team is going to give you that for moving down a few spots?
80 points,
It's not going to happen.
Okay. All right, then you know, if that's – but I'm saying if a team's really enamored with a certain player, they might go – but even if we got a third round and changed with our fourth round –
what you could do mathematically, okay, the only thing that would make some sense is if potentially you swapped your number – third-round pick at 87, if you wanted to go down a bit, and swap that sucker out, okay, and lose approximately maybe 30 to 40 points in the third round, you could then make a swap of third-round picks and a swap of first-round picks, and that might help you out a little bit. But I'm telling you, Charlie, what you're asking for is not going to be easy to do.
All right. I'm just saying. I just think where we are, some team is going to want to grab somebody.
Well, but you know, here's the thing, Charlie. You could say that about every year and every draft. I mean, I don't really think this draft is any different.
About any draft.
No, last year, if you recall, there were some teams that wanted to move up because when Paxton Lynch was still available, they were thinking about getting into the late first round to grab a quarterback. I remember there was talk about maybe the Cowboys would move up because they were excited about him, and then they didn't get it done, and they just waited on Dak Prescott in the fourth round. So, once again, there's always going to be somebody that may want to move up because a player falls and they think they could grab them. But, you know, it's a matter of whether or not, like Paul laid out based on the chart, if they're actually gaining some good return on that.
And see, here's the other problem, Charlie. If you're going to move down, or number-wise down, moving up, I guess, is the proper term to call. If you're going to go from 87, right, and you're going to try to get what is worth approximately 80 points, you're going to have to get up into the low 70s range, okay? None of those teams are behind you in the first round. So now you got to make it a three-way trade. That's very difficult to do. Look, but I'm with you in concept. If you get more picks, it's not a bad idea in this draft.
Yeah.
I'm with
you.
It's just going to be very hard to do.
Like I'm saying, say if O.J. Howard was sitting there at 23, and there's a bunch of other tight ends that we really like, what's his name, Buckley or Buckner.
Butt from Michigan?
So, yeah. Now, you know that a ton of people would want O.J. Howard. That's where you could pick up some picks. I'm just saying, there's going to be some guy who's going to drop that other teams really want, and I think we could be in a good position to pick up some more picks.
Well, assuming, though, Charlie, and I completely understand where you're getting at, but that's assuming also that where the Giants are at 23, they may have a player in mind that they really like, and they want to use that pick to grab that player.
And
you also need to consider that.
And to be fair, Charlie, it's entirely possible that in that spot, given what is left on the board, O.J. Howard and his blocking skills at tight end, he might be a difference maker on this offense. You might just want to take him.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the Giants would have two or three other guys that would be very close to Howard in other positions.
Yeah,
but,
I understand.
You know, I mean, I'm speculating, but I just think we need...
It's an interesting call, that's for sure.
Draft picks in this draft. That's basically what I'm saying.
So okay.
I'm hoping that something might happen that way.
We hear you, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call.
Let's see what happens in free agency first. I'll tell you, that's certainly going to be a big player here.
No doubt about that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Lou in North Carolina. Lou, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi, Lou.
Hey, I think, we're all in agreement with Howard's the guy we really want. And the guy who's need a tight end position.
We're all in agreement. Okay, it's unanimous.
That's it. Giants fan base has determined the 23rd overall pick.
Second on the board as a tight end.
Okay.
Neither one are available. What do you think about that kid McCaffrey?
Christian McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey. I think he'd be a matchup nightmare.
I was talking to Rob Rang from CBS out in Indianapolis, and he loves McCaffrey. And my only take on that is that I don't think he fits exactly what the Giants want to do or the personnel that they have. Because remember something now. Given their mix right now in the backfield, don't you think that a power back is a better fit than an athlete like McCaffrey, who, by the way, I think is going to be a good pro, and depending upon what system he goes to, will have a very nice rookie season and maybe many more after that. I think his versatility could be a plus. It could also be a negative if he goes to a team that doesn't figure out how to use him right. They may get so enamored with his versatility that they don't zero him in on a certain spot, and they wind up misusing him. That could happen too. But I think the Giants are in a position to really need a power back more than a McCaffrey, in my mind.
See,
they can get a power back in the later rounds.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
They already have Paul Perkins. And if you have Shane Vereen and Paul Perkins and a power back, where is McCaffrey going to touch the ball?
We don't know where we have Vereen, what his injury history the past couple of years.
Well, but hold, the only injury history, though, for the most part, was this past season, in fairness.
Yeah.
I mean, when you say injury history, I mean, I don't understand. I find it comical. I'm not blaming you, Lou, but a guy goes down for one season, then all of a sudden people say he's got an injury history. I mean, he's been pretty durable outside of that.
Okay, last year. Okay.
So.
Well, and you know what, though? To be fair to the call, and I want to be fair to you here, we don't have the medical reports on how Vereen's coming back from the tricep. He had the two injuries last season. You nor I nor Lance know exactly where he stands medically. For all we know, maybe that isn't going along so well, and maybe we're making a horrible assumption to think that he's going to be back as the third down back. But you know what? Mm-hmm. The bad news is none of us are going to know that until, at the very least, the Giants report back for the offseason program in mid-April and we get a chance to talk to him.
But the bigger point here is the fact that if you were to evaluate the roster as it stands right now, putting the injury question marks aside.
If you assume he can go.
Correct. If you assume he could go, you have versatility between Vereen and Perkins.
Yes.
Then if you bring in McCaffrey, Lou, as you mentioned, to me, and I think Paul would agree, it's repetitious of what you already have on the roster. Where I think the goal would be, for the sake of the backfield, is to bring somebody who is going to add some facet to the running game that is not already showcased between Vereen and Perkins.
McCaffrey doesn't solve your lack of a power run game. He doesn't solve that.
No, he don't. I just think he'd be a nightmare.
He's
a great athlete.
He's going to cause problems.
Lou, I agree with you. There's no doubt about that. What else you got, Lou?
That's it, guys.
Okay. That's it? Okay. And gotcha. By the way, I knew his dad.
Ed McCaffrey. Yes.
I knew Eddie very well.
Giants ties.
And quite honestly, they could use Ed McCaffrey on this team right now.
Wide receiver.
He was a big fella.
Big
target. A tall beanstalk, if you will.
Yeah. Made a name for himself more so with the Denver Broncos.
Yes, he did.
Later on in his career.
Dan Reeves often said his biggest mistake as coach of the New York Giants was cutting Ed McCaffrey.
Well,
I think he was right.
It's no surprise, though, that he's produced a son that knows how to play football. The genes tend to pass on, and the McCaffrey family case, that certainly has played out that way. And, you know, I think another reason why perhaps people get excited over a guy like McCaffrey, Paul, and maybe it's just because of what's happened in recent history. I think a lot of people look at what Ezekiel Elliott did for the Cowboys in year one, and they think, oh, well, if there's this versatile, dynamic running back, it's worth taking a pick or taking a high risk type of situation on him because you get a good return. Or like a Todd Gurley, for example, too, with the Rams. Although Gurley fell back a little bit, I don't think it was necessarily because of him. But remember, these running backs are only effective based on the people you put in front of them to help them succeed.
No doubt.
That's what it comes down to.
And remember something, too, now. When you're watching running backs, and I don't want to pick on this guy because I liked him a lot. He was a good person. Won the Heisman Trophy. When Ron Dayne came to the Giants, everybody thought that he was going to be a big power back who was going to be the answer. Now, for 1 year, he had, as a rookie, over 700 yards, helped the Giants make a Super Bowl, him and Tiki Barber, Thunder and Lightning. And then it went downhill after that. Really, the reason was the Giants' run blocking wasn't suited for him. When he was at Wisconsin, they would run that zone scheme, and they're opening up these holes the size of elephants. And he was just having a field day. Well, when he got to the NFL, the blocking wasn't quite as good, and you needed more elusiveness to be able to make yardage out of thin cracks. Tiki could do it. Dayne couldn't.
And those are things you have to evaluate. It's not so simple to just take a guy, even though he may be so electric in college, and then you throw him into any NFL team and it's going to happen. There are a few exceptions to the rule. For example, if you put Barry Sanders behind just about any offensive line, I think the guy would probably find a way to get an opening because he probably could juke out about half the defensive line
He'd
to come at him.
He'd still be pretty good.
Yeah. Like I said, there are exceptions to the rule, but it's Barry Sanders I'm using as an example. It's not just every day, every down type of running back.
Well, I often throw it out and say, hey, Jim Brown could not produce behind this, quote, X offensive line, whoever it is that we're talking about on that particular day, because it just doesn't happen to a guy who as easily when he doesn't have jukeability. You know, Tiki had jukeability. Barry Sanders had jukeability.
Yeah.
You know, when you have jukeability, you can be relatively effective even with a subpar line in front of you.
Let's take a look at Twitter here before we wrap up shop. Hashtag Giants chat number, people weighing in who may have not had an opportunity to chime in via the phone lines on the topic of tight end. At Supermax76, what's your thoughts on trying to pick up Fasano? He's referring to Anthony Fasano as a blocking tight end in free agency.
I have mentioned Fasano several times in the last several weeks, as you will recall. I've also put it out there on Twitter as well. He is a sound, solid blocking tight end. won't do nearly as much for you in the passing game. It would seem at age 30-plus, he would be an economical solution if that's the way you wanted to go to fill the spot. I understand him to be healthy. I don't think there's a medical risk there. So what you have to determine is, A, how much does he have left? And B, do you really want that almost one-dimensional type of player to fit into your offense? Or do you want to take a chance and get one of these potential all-around kind of guys like O.J. Howard, who really has more of an all-around game, at least we think he will, than an Anthony Fasano will have?
Well, or you could address the blocking in free agency and then still go for the younger, more versatile all-around tight end. When you, the way you were describing with respect to Fasano, it's sort of the route of Daniel Fells, where you bring in the established veteran who you know, if you put him on the line, he can block, and then he'll help other assets of your team.
Somebody sent me a tweet the other day, too. I can't remember who it was. Suggested Deion Sims from the Dolphins. And he's another guy, not as good a blocker as Fasano, but he's a good blocker. That's what he's known for. And he's an inline guy. He's like 270 pounds. You know, he's more of a Howard Cross type.
Correct.
Okay? You're never going to line him up in the slot. You're never going to line him up out wide. And you're probably never going to put him in as an H-back or in motion. He's pretty much a one-dimensional inline tight end. You got to decide if that's the way you want to go. And you really are that desperate to help your power run game, which everybody knows I like to do. Now, are you willing to make the trade-off to go to a guy who is virtually one-dimensional?
Though he's been a pretty big red zone target for the Dolphins. They have utilized him.
But coming out of an inline stance.
Correct, yes, exactly.
I mean, he's not, scheme-wise,
yeah,
he's not going to help you.
That's fair. All right, let's take a look at another tweet or two. Tight end, very busy topic. At Not Sid, tight end also covers a big body receiver that can go through the middle, something else the Giants need to address. So saying that if perhaps they don't get the big wide receiver, you can maybe address that bigger target through the tight end position. That's the point.
I disagree. I think you really do need a big target wide receiver on the outside. Someone who you can throw the ball to high in the box, out there by the sideline, and he can go get the ball and make a play for you. I think the Giants have missed that for years.
Well, and given the fact that you have Sterling Shepard and Odell Beckham coming back as your top two guys, I think, just like we're talking about what's remaining in the backfield, that you want to bring in complements that provide something different, I agree with you. It makes sense to have that larger target as a wide receiver. Let's just maybe take a glance at one more tweet here before we wrap up shop. I know a number of people were weighing in on a variety of different topics throughout the course of the program. Let's see what else we have here. Elo H at Elo underscore Bajo, the question which was asked earlier by somebody on the phone, who had a better career, Cruz or Smith? No question, Cruz is better than Steve Smith, not even close. So he would agree with the two of us based on that. And then at Not Sit again says, if O.J. Howard is there at 23, the Giants better be in full deep print to the podium, according to what he has to say. That was Charlie who's saying that if maybe Howard's there and 23 is around, they should ship it out because they could get a decent return. But he's saying, if Howard's there, you got to take him under the circumstances. So,
you know,
I don't think many people would disagree with that.
I just don't think he's going to be.
I would agree with that, but I'm saying that in the event he's there, I think a lot of people would also be banging down the door and
especially
say,
especially after
grab
the
him,
combine.
Grab him.
I mean, he's just going up and up and up.
Yes,
so
he did help his cause, as did many other prospects. Well, Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern. We will get more into free agency as we near tomorrow. I'm sure the Rumorville is going to start to heat up because, obviously, free agents can begin talking to prospective teams. So that is something, obviously, to monitor. Tomorrow, we'll also have a guest on to recap everything that went down at the combine, so stay tuned for that as we will delve into everything with respect to the bench press, the 40-yard dash, who rose their stock, who maybe took a dip from the interviews, and so forth. So we will give you a full report from Indianapolis tomorrow. We'll also look ahead to free agency because there's going to be a lot of stories with respect to that as well. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com.